welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yes, we are on a couple minutes early, as it turns out, because, hey, why not? If they let me on, I'll talk. And for those people who might be a minute or two coming on board, I won't get into any great detail about anything for the next 2 minutes. I will just generally talk about tonight's show, which is on spiritually growing from the human to the superhuman kingdom. For those of you who are unfamiliar with this subject, I have had a couple of shows in the past dealing with this very subject, although, again, tonight's going to be different than any other show, I guarantee it. But I want to just give some idea by what I mean by superhuman. And superhuman is really a kind of strange word to some people, because they say, well, super means like beyond, you know, greater than, something like that, but still recognizably human. And I think that there is a rationale for using that verbiage, although I have to tell you, if you go to a number of spiritual books, you know, dealing with the metaphysical world, so to speak, those books generally tend to not use the word superhuman. They have words like master, or they'll call them great teachers, you know, like of some sort. They sometimes have some kind of adjective before that. Or they may have, you know, something like great yogi, you know. This is all kinds of, and then sometimes you'll hear the word lama, you know, like some people think that's like an animal, but you know, this is just to get into these areas where you have different types of expressions of people who are into the general genre of superhuman. And now, since we're actually in the time zone where people should be tuning in if they haven't already, let me define the word super so that we understand what I mean by it. What I mean by it is that the senses of the people we're dealing with have so joined together as to become one sense, or come closer to becoming one sense, in each of the three lower bodies which are identifiably human. That's why it puts it into the human kingdom and beyond, though, because you're relying upon this basis that the senses have become superhuman, because it involves where humans still exist as far as having these special senses. Now, there are some beings, which I wouldn't call even superhuman anymore, that go beyond what I could define as a superhuman, because they actually have joined their senses beyond where humans exist at all. They've joined them completely together. And those beings would be considered like planetary beings. Now, superhuman beings are spiritual beings, and they're members of what is sometimes referred to as a hierarchy of spirituality. So we should consider them spiritual, meaning that they exist within God's thought, and they live and act within God's thought all the time. We don't. So that's one of the definitional differences. Human beings tend to not, rather than to, think in God's thought. There are really parts to us, three parts to us, that have to be developed and then joined together for us to have more than, we'll say most of the time, a communion, a co-creation with God or our Creator. And that those three parts actually join together. Some people may know this or may not know it. Even in the physical part of our beingness, they join together inside the brain and connect to the mind, which is a different thing than the brain. And the three parts of the brain that are involved is in back of the pituitary gland in the frontal lobe, which is, there's a frontal area that recognizes God in a kind of thinking way. And then there's a part that's above the carotid artery that's really connected to the limbic system and the hypothalamus. And that part has to do more with the emotional part of us. And the final part is in the pineal part, which is kind of back towards the occipital lobe, if you're familiar with that. So it's kind of where we see things. But it gives us a different kind of vision. It gives us a vision of God. And that truly is connected to a part of us that really goes into and begins to see the intuitional part of existence, an intuitive mind, you might say. And it connects us to that intuitive mind. So those three parts of our brains actually function that way. And recently, in the last year or two, it has been discovered by neurobiologists, people who study the brain, you know, and the physical parts of it, that those three parts actually together create a sense of faith and God. I swear to you it's the truth. There are several experiments proving this. And you might say, oh, come on. We know you've been saying that for 20 or 30 years, and other people have been saying it for hundreds of years. And they really discovered that? Yeah, they did, honestly. So you go check it out. I don't know if it's on the internet or wherever, but I know that information is available. So those three parts actually come together, and they produce the part of a human being that gives us a sense of God. And it's why we, in comparison to all the lower kingdoms, actually seek God on an average. Now, some of you out there may not, and some humans certainly don't. Some humans may even reject and even be hostile towards that concept. But on an average, human beings do this because that's our nature. It's what makes us different from our cousins, the apes, etc., because they are not human, and we are. Okay, now, when these three parts of the brain become fused together due to a thing called the three kundalinis, it's a kind of a funny word, that is a type of energy that flows through the earth, goes through your centers, the chakras, the major chakras, and also the minor ones, and eventually fuses these centers through service. Once that happens, the centers don't function any longer as a regular human does, separately, with occasionally joining together and giving us a vision, a clearer vision of God and our soul, by the way. But most of the time we keep them separate because we separate them because we're selfish. We're focused on ourselves instead of service to others. And so this keeps them separate. But in the superhuman being, as they are becoming superhuman, they start reversing that process. They start being more concerned about others, about serving others so that they can co-serve with their creator. We want the creator to become more, and we see that life is the way the creator grows, and so we value life in a greater way, and in a different way, even qualitatively and quantitatively. And so that's what happens when someone is in the process of becoming superhuman and moving from the human kingdom. I hope I'm not going too fast. Again, some people have heard me talk about this before, so this may make more sense to them than those of you who have never heard this show before. You say, well, what did I tune into? Right? Okay, well, you tuned into me, Niles McFlower. That's right. You got it. And so what does this really do? Why even be concerned about it, actually? If it's supposed to be something that's so natural, why do we have to even concern ourselves with it? Well, you see, natural is a really interesting word in this situation, because if we look at nature, by nature, humans are humans. They aren't superhumans. Humans are unique in that they aren't evolutionary beyond their base level. At their base level, they are evolutionary. They are created through a series of events that involves evolution with certain spiritual issues brought in to make them special, but not that different from animals that are subhuman. However, for humans to grow beyond that point, there's no more evolution. I mean, and for those of you who are, you know, Darwinian evolutionists, you say, oh, come on. Now, I'm going to prove it to you. I'm going to prove it to you because the next step, there is no nature. There's no natural way to get there. You can't go from being a base human, like, okay, I get up every day, I go to work, I do my thing, and I go, I care about me and my family, and I don't know what's going on. You go from that level to, hey, I'm here to co-serve with my Creator and help all others who seek that to do the same and who have that inclination. That's a totally different ballgame, and it comes from choice. It comes from will. It comes from the first ray part of us, for the first part of God's mind, that we truly desire and are willing to sacrifice to become this thing greater than we are. And it takes enormous amounts of will and sacrifice, this first quality of God's mind, in order to even make the beginning steps in this direction. And there's nothing evolutionary about it. It is not something that's going to be natural. As a matter of fact, it may be considered abnormal by people who are not doing it. And maybe even those people may chastise or even violently reject those who are doing it. So you can look at this from a standpoint of being something exceptional, I hope, or possibly in some way you could be antagonistic towards it. But regardless, it is not something that is natural. So in other words, if you don't do anything, you're not going to become a superhuman. You can sit around and go, or any of the other phrases you care all day long, and if that's all you do, you will not become a superhuman. Because superhumans require spiritual service, which means that you've got to complete what you're doing in some activity beyond just the question of faith or meditation or even knowledge. So it isn't educational. It doesn't come about because you learn anything specific. It's how you apply it in a co-creative way with others who are doing the same and with God. You have to become more, by choice, a functional part of God. So the word natural is foreign to the process. It's a non-natural process. It's a difficult process. It's a process that confuses most people, and it somewhat antagonizes some others. It leads to a state of beingness that, for a lot of people, is confounding, confusing, and maybe undesirable. Let's talk about some of the undesirable qualities, because I think that it's important that it's almost like giving some kind of warning about this is not for everybody. It probably isn't. Okay, the process has a number of difficulties. The first of which is that there's a thing called karma. Some people believe in it, some don't. But karma is the completing of actions that were taken in an earlier time, but because of a separation of time from space due to selfishness, the effects of most selfish acts results in negative karma, meaning that the effects of those acts coming back to the person who created the selfishness could take years and even lifetimes to complete itself. And the odd part about the spiritual business is that if you make the choice to become more co-creative with God, you start joining time with space. That's a good thing, it sounds like, because then you have a lot more time to do things, etc. But it does accelerate the karma at the same time. And so a person, especially at the beginning of the process, has a lot of karma to work out. And if it seems as though, well, gee, I turned spiritual and now my life has turned to, you know, garbage and I'm getting punished for it. What fun is that? Well, it isn't fun. And there's no great warm and fuzzy things that come out of a lot of at least the initial spiritual growing into a superhuman. It's very, very grueling and sometimes frighteningly difficult. So now you might say, well, boy, this guy is not selling me on this thing. This just sucks. I think I'll go turn on the next station or something. Well, before you do that, I mean, obviously there's got to be something more positive on the other end than just that. This is the beginning, and somewhat the maybe towards up to the middle of the process, there's difficulties. But there's also some joy on occasion, because sometimes you overcome the karma. You actually beat it out, and you create so much virtue that things light up, including those you're serving, and you say, wow, this is what it's all about. And great joy becomes sometimes bliss, if it's consistent enough. And you suddenly reach a point of being just in a wonderful place, one that can barely be described from a purely human standpoint. And is it because you're now feeling yourself being a true part of being God, and God is a wonderful state to be in existence with. It's the most wonderful possible state we could be in. Okay, and you also start becoming more one with all the others who are doing the same thing. So all the other people who are becoming superhuman, you get a lot closer to, which is always a benefit. Now, at the beginning of the process, people feel amazingly isolated, because the exact opposite sensation is what happens. When you have this karmic negativity coming, you feel very separated and isolated from everyone and everything, and you wonder what the heck you're doing. There's tremendous discouragement. I can speak with some significant understanding of that situation. And it doesn't go away just because you do advance yourself. Let me explain. There are periods where there are great senses of joy and bliss as you grow in this process. But because the worst karma is the last to be dealt with, and that's another screwball but true statement, unfortunately, that worst karma produces some significant feelings of alienation and difficulty. And so those at the end of the process do have their moments of being challenged, and the moments can last for months or even years. And so it is not without its shortcomings in terms of being warm, fuzzy, feeling good. And so I don't want you to think that this whole process is what a lot of people would call like the spiritual bliss journey, because it isn't. It's probably most of the time not that, but there are moments where it is. The moments, luckily for most, is enough to keep them on the path. But there are some who fall from the path and may lose lifetimes because they just give up. And so that's a concern. There's also the challenge of even staying in this world. We live in one of the most challenging planets in the universe, not just here in this neck of the woods. Earth has a history of tremendous negative planetary karma and a history of going bad several times in terms of evil overcoming with massive destruction as a result and starting up pretty much almost all over again. And the people who've come here, the humans that have come here, their souls chose to exist in this planet and to serve this planet because they wanted the most challenging of assignments. Generally, they were superior souls to most others. Some of them still created some humans that slipped and became evil. Others have humans who are faltering and having trouble and are not spiritually growing. While some, maybe a minority at this point, probably, yes, are spiritually growing and are moving slowly and maybe jerky up and down, towards the spiritual kingdom. And that's a good thing. Okay? So, I hope I'm not confusing you with saying all these things. But there's a lot to explain, and I want to make sure that I cover it well enough so that people don't, you know, say, well, I heard you 5 years ago when you said, and I've been trying it, and my life has turned, you know. Well, okay, forewarned is forearmed, and I'm giving you, you know, you're now being informed about the way things go. So this is hopefully for some of you out there a way of better understanding so that you can go through this without the terror and problems that can sometimes become one. And I'm going to tell you, one of the ways to get over this problem is to do it together with a group of people. As a matter of fact, it's such a problem process and so difficult, especially through the first parts of each one of these stages called initiations, that a person without a spiritual group will eventually fail. I'm going to say that again. No matter how good you are at doing it at some points, if you choose to do it completely isolated from others, first of all, you're an illusion for doing that. But besides that illusion that causes you to choose that, you will inevitably fail. My understanding is that no one has ever achieved this spiritual growth and become a superhuman without eventually becoming connected to others who are working with them together. It's so difficult, it cannot be done alone. No human being has ever done it, at least on Earth. That's my understanding. You can disagree with me, and that's okay. I don't have any way to prove what I'm saying. But you can think through it and maybe come to the conclusion based upon just how difficult of a process it is. Now, what does everybody do if there's a group of people to help the others? And usually the groups of people are not homogeneous. They are heterogeneous. That means that the people are very different. Because in order to be a spiritual group, each person has to support other people who have different problems from them. Different strengths, different problems. And that's how by sharing the strengths and by healing people's other but different, you know, problems, the group can survive even though the individuals without the group would not. So that's what I mean by a spiritual group. It's really a heterogeneous rather than homogeneous group of people. And the more advanced the group, the more heterogeneous. And the beginning groups, which are sometimes called first-level initiate groups, I'll explain that later, but that's what they are called. Those groups generally are more homogeneous by far than our more advanced groups because they would tend to fall apart if they don't have some common thing that they have of interest. It's more personal sometimes, but not so much soul level. And that keeps them going. But as you move into the more advanced groups, you need this heterogeneity in order for the strengths of the people to be different and not in the same places, and the weaknesses are also in the same way, so that they can help each other. And this is the key element to it. And you might not know that, but now you do. You know, and these are important things to know about because a lot of people say, well, I don't know how to find a group and what kind of conditions of it. Well, the first thing you want to find is people who are not like you. How's that for a beginning? People who are somewhat asymmetrical to each other. Yes, they're going to have a common thing that they seek God and that they're co-creating with God in different ways. But outside of that, they may be doing it quite differently. And may be completely different from one another. Yet, that's their strength, not their weakness. Remember that. Especially as the karma gets worse. And as things start accelerating in that process, it's always better to have heterogeneous rather than homogeneic types of people together. Okay? All right, let's continue on and talk about some of the other elements about becoming a superhuman. Superhumans exist in a completely different kind of reality than the human being. Reality to a human being is mostly illusion. Maybe 95-98% of what the human being thinks is real is not. It's unreal. It's not the same. It's not they don't understand and they don't sense correctly the existence of the universe that they are in and what their relationship is to that existence. Whereas a superhuman is kind of like a flip of that. They're almost 100% out of illusion, and they are existing because they understand the universe. They create and do things because they understand the universe. And they respond almost not at all to any illusion if they have some. And so their whole, it's almost like they're the opposite of a human being in terms of why they exist. Human beings exist mostly to satisfy selfish interests. That's things that make them sensibly feel good and emotionally feel good and mentally feel good, in a sense, if you use that word to describe mental. And mentally, in many ways, it's to satisfy themselves. And so they don't seek to grow more of others or of God. They seek to grow more of themselves in a smaller self way. And this is so narrow of an existence that compared to the superhuman is like living hundreds, maybe thousands of times a greater existence than the narrow existence of the human being. The human being thinks its life, or her or his life, is very diverse and complex and everything. But in perspective to the superhuman, their life is as narrow as a rat in a maze or a rat in a cage. There isn't much to their life, but they think there is because they are in illusion again. They don't even know that their life isn't very meaningful, but they think that all kinds of important things are happening that really aren't of much significance. And so they have little change. They have little from one day, year, decade to the next, there's not a heck of a lot that changes in their existence. They are almost, you could say, predictable in a kind of not too nice and negative way. Okay, so the superhuman then lives to create and to create in a specific way that enlightens themselves and others, and brings God into themselves and others at greater and greater levels. Well, you might say, what's so great about that? You know, why is that better than wanting a new car and fancy clothes and you know, relationships with other human beings on various levels, and to have all the things that people think are fun and interesting, etc.? What's wrong with that? Well, what's wrong with it is all those things are so meaningless as to produce almost instant boredom. And beyond that, what's wrong with them is that they don't produce joy and bliss. They only produce what some humans refer to as transient levels of happiness. Some people refer to that is even less than that, which is excitement. So you live from one exciting thing, experience, whatever, to another. How sad that is. And to the superhuman, they look at human beings as being in just almost sheer torture on a daily basis because of this almost unbelievable level of meaninglessness and unrecognized boredom that these humans are putting themselves through. There's virtually nothing that's really, no great joy or bliss or anything that's going on in their life. It's like, you know, getting on a roller coaster for the 10,000th time and saying, well, you know, like some kind of excitement with it. But there's nothing substantial, nothing that lasts. To a human, these experiences that are interesting, maybe exciting, maybe a little happiness, are transient by moments of time and then fade quickly. Whereas the opposite experience happens to the superhuman. To the superhuman, you have a building of meaning that never goes away because the meaning from yesterday's actions are built upon further in today's actions and interactions, and further in each living moment. And so there's never a point where the superhuman says, yeah, I'm bored with everything. It's because there's such meaning in everything they create, because they're creating God, and God is everything. So what one creates becomes a bigger and bigger part of everything as they keep creating, and others co-create with them, with the parts that all the others have created. It's like one for all for one, and it's all growing at a fantastic rate, and it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. The interesting thing is the opposite is happening to the human. As the human becomes more and more selfish, they're separating themselves from everybody else. Instead of having this tremendous growth, we'll call it consciousness, going on, instead, they have a sense that their world is getting narrower and narrower and narrower. Well, they may have more things, and they may have exciting moments I can talk about ad infinitum and ignosium, but nothing that can be built on, nothing that others are sharing, nothing they can share truly with others. They don't get closer with others. They get more distant from others the more they do this kind of illusion behaviors. You see? I hope I'm making the case that the superhuman state is a wonderful state, although getting there is one heck of a job. Now, we're going to talk a lot more about that job, of course, in tonight's show. But I wanted to be careful that I balance this first portion of the show in showing that, yeah, it's very hard, but there are some definite benefits to all this. Yeah, it's long-term. There's no doubt about it. You've got to be in for a very long haul, because the universe is not created in a day, and it is far, far from ever over. It goes indefinitely. It grows indefinitely. You can say, yes, there's cycles in which it contracts and expands. And this is, the point is that nothing that is ever created in and from and for God ever goes away. It's just built on more. And that's forever. Now, are there other universes with other gods? Sure. But that's a different issue. It's still all interconnected, and it all grows indefinitely. The process never stops, and that's what's so wonderful about it, whereas with the human's consciousness and the human's side of sense and, unfortunately, excessive illusion, to the human, everything goes away. They fear death. They think they lose it all. Consciousness is ended at a certain point. Everything else is gone. Even if they're religious, oftentimes people still have the subconscious fears that death is the end of everything. And we're all going to die, therefore what are we doing here? If you're caught in that illusion, life becomes frightening. And it becomes some kind of obsessive search for something that will be meaningful. Of course, if it isn't God, you'll never find it. Evil people find meaning through power and control and destruction of others who believe in God and God itself, if they are honest with themselves about it, although they may not be. And so it's through this destructive process that they find meaning, which makes no sense, of course. It's kind of a bizarre state of beingness. But there are evil people who believe that. If you don't believe there are evil people, you're an illusion. Evil wants you to believe that because that's how it manages to survive. It can't survive on a planet where people are fully conscious of its own existence and have a good understanding of what and how it is functioning. Once that happens, evil's finished. Evil can only exist where there's ignorance or there's an exaggeration of its abilities, powers, etc., and thinking that it's everywhere. If those things are eliminated, evil is gone as well. Okay, so also be aware that evil only exists on planets where humans exist. It is part of the process of growing from being a human to a superhuman. You have to be able to understand evil, have to be able to eventually fight evil, and overpower evil using things different than just power itself. And so this is necessary, and it is a requirement, particularly during what is known as the two of four advanced initiations that humans have to go through in order to reach the superhuman kingdom. Again, we'll cover that. I just haven't got there yet. So, okay. So this is fascinating to me anyway. I hope I'm not boring you. And that is that we now have a pretty good understanding, I hope you have, about the difference between being a human and a superhuman. The advantages of being superhuman and the tremendous disadvantages of being human, I think I'm hoping are coming through. Although, again, I want to reiterate that you don't get to be superhuman by sitting around and just kind of praying or meditating. How nice it would be for some people to do that. But it's not possible. It requires tremendous amounts of efforts. And it means that it's so difficult that you have to have others that you do it with. Because alone, you'll fail. Now, I have to tell you, a lot of people at the beginning of the process of moving from human to superhuman choose to do it alone because if they have a fear of giving up control from a personal standpoint, that's a natural part of the personality. And that part is evolutionary. And so, unfortunately, it stands in the way. It just stands in the way for a lot of beginning, sometimes they're called aspirant people, who want to, in a feeling sense, become something greater than who they are. But they desire it without the will to create it. Desire without sufficient will always leads to failure. That's where it goes to. And so many of these people, for several lifetimes, during an aspirant stage, and it usually happens in each one of these levels called initiations, which are four of them. So you could see three times four, maybe 12 lifetimes are wasted completely just trying to be an aspirant and finally getting it through their heads that, you know what, you can't desire it without putting the will out to make the changes and being willing to sacrifice, etc. And you've got to grow your consciousness sufficiently to understand that. And you grow your consciousness by focusing out a little bit more each day, by loving more, giving more in wise ways to others, so that they can do the same. And as you do that, it's a slow process. It could take years. There's a change, and you start getting ahead of the game. And instead of concluding that, oh, I desire it, but I'm not willing to make the change, you start actually taking the effort, taking the stance, I'm going to do this. I am going to achieve this result. And you go ahead and do it. And you get a few successes, and you say, it's not so bad, but I can see this accelerated karma. And you recognize that, that's going to happen. It's not going to be pleasant all the time, but I'm still willing to keep going. Okay. Remember, it doesn't get better just because you move ahead, because you're dealing with more and more significant problems. And the further advanced you are, and the group is that you're working with, the more you're going to be up against this thing, particularly on planet Earth, of the structure of evil itself. That's an unfortunate part of the process. You have to be able to effectively effectively deal with evil. And you've got to do it at a very effective level as you advance. That's a terrible problem because evil is pretty tough to deal with. And it's not getting smaller, it's growing in the present environment. So we have to be aware of that and ready to make the sacrifices necessary, ready to sometimes fail and be even partially destroyed by this evil that can exist, and to get out of the illusions, like, oh, well, maybe it's not really evil. Maybe it's just the people who just didn't have good childhoods or something. They can be turned around. Well, once someone becomes evil, you can't turn them around by just being friends with them. I don't know that our present administration and president, if you're here in the United States, believe that. But I'm telling you that that's a fact. You can't. Evil doesn't have the kind of consciousness that humans have. The best way to describe evil is it's an aberrant form of consciousness, one that is something other than human. It's not. It's sort of subhuman. It's not animal, though, because animals don't exist as recognizing God, so they can't be against God, which is evil. Evil is against God. You might say, but many people who are evil don't believe in God. Well, they don't, but they must, because let me explain. They seek, and I know I'm running out of time for right now, but they for the staff, they seek to be in control. And the need to be in control means there's no room for something else that is greater than them controlling, and that's God. That's the foundation of their problem with God. And we'll get into more of that understanding when we come back, because we're going to go to break. It's about that time. We're going to go to break, and again, on today's show, we will be going to about a quarter after the hour, so we get more time. So don't give up if you haven't understood everything I've said, because I will be explaining more, and hopefully you'll get it. Also, you can always call in. I'm here, and you've got the numbers if you want to call it. So we'll come back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I was just talking with our engineer, Seth. And in case you don't know, and some people still don't know this, because it's relatively new, you do not have to listen to the show over the internet. If you would prefer, you can call in to one of the numbers. I don't know how it's exactly done, because I don't have it in front of me, but you call into one of the numbers they have, and you're hooked up, and you can listen to the phone, to the show over your telephone, be it cell phone or corded phone or whatever. And the whole show can be listened to that way. So you have that option if you care to take it. And that means if you're not around a computer, let's say you have to go somewhere, do something, you can listen to the show as long as you can listen to the telephone. Wow. So, and more people, according to what I've heard, are taking advantage of that. So that's a good thing. So if, you know, if next time, if you can't be around a computer, then you can do it this other way. So we'd love to have you connect with us, whatever way you can do it. Okay, so let's continue on. People, human beings are complex. We are given this incredible ability to understand our own creator. Animals can't do this. But because of this complexity, we also are given freedom. Freedom to think, freedom to choose. And some of us sometimes choose to say, what creator? We ignore our senses. We ignore our intuitive understandings. And instead decide that there is no creator. It's just us alone and a thing called nature and evolution, and it's all science of some sort, but not really a science that includes consciousness. And it doesn't include spirit at all, because spirit is God's thought. So thought is pretty much out of the picture anyway. And to these people, if they start becoming more and more self-focused, they can become evil. What happens when you become evil? Well, you give up your soul, eventually. In the beginning of the process, you sort of loosen the connection, and another soul called the group cosmic soul of evil, which is like a huge mind in deep space somewhere, outside of the galaxies, really, although it incorporates a few galaxies that have been swamped with too much of its existence. And it exists for the purpose of controlling the universe. Now, I talk about the universe. I'm not just talking about the physical universe, but we think we know about right now. I'm talking about the other six dimensions of the universe, the whole universe. And this evil wants to take over the whole universe because it seeks to control. It's like a super personality out of control. And it's a personality that wants to destroy God because it sees no way to control God except by destruction. It basically functions through power, which is a means of changing or exchanging energy from one state to another. So it's very concerned with the material or energy part of existence. And it isn't concerned with the thought or spiritual part of existence because it can't gain any power through thought, it thinks, and it believes it gets all its power through using some form of changing states of energy. Now, also, human beings are the only kind of beings that exist in a state of evil. I know you've heard of dark masters. But a dark master is still a human being, somewhat less in some respects than normal human beings are, because their senses are significantly diminished and damaged from their extreme selfishness. You might say, well, then how did it become these mean and terrible beings if they're, and that we call them dark masters? Because they have found ways to steal power from other human beings who aren't as dark and maybe not evil at all. They have found that they can do this through fear and intimidation and destruction of others. And so they use that as a modality. And so that's what we call evil, because that's their means of processing their universe. And they're seeking this, again, because ultimately, when they reject their creator, they become super afraid. Isn't that bizarre? They live in a constant state of repressed fear, since by understanding and becoming one with your creator, you become an infinite being with great longevity, infinite longevity, and no fear of death or anything else. Whereas the opposite happens when you reject your creator. So then you seek to have all this power that you steal from others, thinking that's how you can stay alive indefinitely. You just got to keep taking power from others. Well, it doesn't work, because eventually you have to take more and more power, because every time you take power, you diminish your senses, so you have to take a bit more than you did before to keep yourself looking like you still have a sense, because you're using the senses of others rather than yourself to make up for your own loss of sense. And eventually, it's like a Ponzi game. You can't keep up with it. There's not enough power that an evil being can garner eventually to make up for its severe loss of sense, and eventually the senses fall apart, the bodies fall apart, and that being regresses from human to some subhuman species, sometimes worms and sometimes plants or whatever. And the point is that there is no way around it. It's inevitable, but may take very long periods of time, like thousands of Earth years, physical Earth years, or longer, hundreds of thousands in some rare cases. So it looks like, to the evil being, that they're winning, like, for a long time. They keep using this power kind of structure, and are frightening and intimidating people who are not completely understanding who and what they are, and that they're really very weak beings, but they don't see that because they project this image of intimidating power. And so then they, for a long period of time, by our limited understanding and standards, it appears like they're winning. And then we doubt whether maybe we're doing the right thing. But you gotta understand evil to be able to fight it. And if you don't understand evil, it will overcome you, because it's got a lot of tricks up its sleeves. It's the light of understanding that kills it off. Evil inevitably can't win. And it's just a matter of time. Now, if you say, yeah, but wait a second, I don't want to suffer for hundreds of thousands of years or something. Well, no, I agree with you there, because that's the reason we should be proactive and not allow evil to just gain more and more power and control, because that only leads to a greater level of suffering for all of humanity. So I hope that makes some sense to you, because if I didn't cover that, a lot of people would say, well, then what about all those evil people? Okay, so now you know. Now you know what's going to happen. Okay, spiritually growing from the human to the superhuman kingdom requires that we are willing to sacrifice most of the areas that are exciting, that are easy, that are warm and friendly on initial contact, and that give us a sense of false security and maybe even false hope, and provides us with we'll call it temporary sense of satiation and happiness. You got to give all that up. And a lot of you are going, that sounds like a lot of stuff. Yeah. You can't make it from the human to the superhuman unless you're willing to give up most, and in some cases all, depending upon the lifetime you're in, of that stuff. Now, how hard is it? Well, if you were to do it all in one day, like, man, would that be murder. You couldn't do it. But if you do it little pieces at a time, and you try to balance it out so it's not too much one way than another, you can accomplish it. How much time does it take? Oh, give or take a few dozen lifetimes. Yeah, no kidding. And unfortunately, somewhere between 2 and 3 dozen lifetimes, but unfortunately, about at least that many, or twice that many in some cases, you won't even be doing it at all. So a person, one lifetime, might decide, well, I'm going to try that. And maybe it's the very first lifetime. And during that lifetime, they're kind of an aspirant. They really want to do it, but they don't really choose to do it. And then the next 2 lifetimes, they might choose not to do it. So now you got 3 lifetimes, only one in which there was any attempt made, and even that was kind of a feeble one. And this is how it starts off. For a lot of souls, on an average, and again, this is just an average, folks. Don't think that, oh, well, he gave that number and it's got to be. No, no, it's just to give you an idea. Around 700 lifetimes before you reach that state where you start experimenting and say, well, I'd really like to try that because I want to be something, I want to be part of God. I want to really be one with my Creator. And if this is where you're at, then you could be starting what is known as the initiation process. It begins by being an aspirant, not really accomplishing much spiritually, but sort of trying it out for a few months, maybe a year on, 5 years off. And like I said, you may end that lifetime and not come back to it for a couple. Eventually, people get past the aspirant stage, and they enter the stage known as the first level of initiation. Now, what is that about? Initiation. I mean, why initiation? Why don't you just call it living? Well, because the process is so difficult that it takes too long for an efficient number, effective number, of human beings to become superhuman on a planet as dark and evil as Earth is at the present time. So there has been a change to the quote-unquote, we'll call it normal process of becoming a superhuman, and they added a thing called initiation process, which means that when you get to a certain level, which is constantly changing and moving up a little harder all the time, when you get to a certain level, the amount of work necessary to change and fuse the senses together is done by those ahead of humans in the superhuman kingdom that actually help out. Now, there's pluses and minuses to this, because if you didn't create all the work necessary to fuse your centers together, once they are fused together, although you don't have as much illusion, for sure, that's somewhat removed, you also have a great deal more karma faster than would normally have taken place. So after you get this few seconds of fusing that's given to you, called a zap by some people, that creates this change literally in seconds, your life gets worse rather than better, much more struggling. And some people fall off of the spiritual path due to that. So there's a negative side to this whole thing because it accelerates them so fast. I mean, yeah, it might be better if we can spend a couple more lifetimes gradually developing what we get in one of these apps from the initiation process. But overall, it seems like it saves time. And time is so critical when you got a planet that's edging towards oblivion because of more and more people becoming evil. So, and the type of evil on the planet is becoming worse as well. So, this experiment now to help out those who are struggling during the process of becoming superhuman, to give them a push, is part of what we're dealing with on Earth. There are four stages that a person goes through before they get the zap, before they get this sudden increase in fusion between their centers, and karma gets really accelerated. Now, these four stages have to do with development of their bodies, okay? The first has to do with developing the physical body and its senses, and it happens in every one of the stages, every one of the types of initiation that a person can go through. But these stages in the initiation are different for each one of the initiations. So there's a separate kind of process someone goes through if they're at the beginning of the initiation process rather than the middle or the end of it. Okay, so at the beginning. So you're a first level of initiation, at that very level of beginning, and you're at the first stage of that first level, the first thing you're trying to do is improve your physical senses so that you can co-create with God a little better. It doesn't sound all that complicated, right? Hey, anybody can do that, right? Okay, what does it mean to improve senses, though? Well, here's the secret to that process, and I think it's best described this way, although other people have other definitions and ways of doing it. And that is that you focus in on one part of the sense at a time, and you try to improve that part while others are not quite as focused in on. And then you switch, and you go to the next, and the next, and the next. And you try to get them about all equal, finally, and then you start over again. You keep increasing. And that seems to be the best that we can do. We can't work on everything at once, because most people who do that fail. So you've got to kind of do it a little bit at a time and focus in on one part of what's wrong with what's going on inside you so that you sense more like your creator. And this is the process that's done in what is known as the etheric physical or sensible senses. And those senses are the senses that most people identify with as, you know, like hearing and sight and smell and touch and taste. Those are the five senses. There's two additional senses. One of them is understanding God, which is the lower spiritual sense. And the other is understanding how to create more of God, which is the higher spiritual sense. There are chakras that correspond to the senses. The two parts of God that I just described come from the lower sense of understanding God, comes from a completed and fully conscious heart chakra. Now, consciousness is the critical element. We all got heart chakras, but most of our heart chakras aren't very conscious. We don't focus outside of ourselves, using that center as a means of sensing for others to serve them. We usually use it to serve ourselves. And therefore, it's used selfishly, and it's clogged with energy, and there's not much consciousness that exists within the center. So that center can't grow without the consciousness element as part of it. The higher spiritual center is the head chakra or crown chakra. That gives us an understanding of how to co-create with that creator and to do it in a way which is very creative. And that is more an active form of consciousness. It has to do more with creation. Okay, so you first develop consciousness, and then you create with the consciousness. That's how you become closer with God in a physical sense. And this is done at the beginning of the first initiation. The first initiation is about how to co-create with God and other people who are doing the same in the physical world. That's what it's about. So you're mostly concerned with physical outcomes. You're looking for ways to co-create and make things that are better for people in a physical sense. That's the beginning of the process. Now, as you move stage by stage through this first level of initiation, you also add other bodies and senses into it, even though the focus is still on the physical part of existence. So the next stage, you go to the astral body, and you start disciplining, is the word, when you focus in on a sense and try to make it better. You start disciplining that sense so that it becomes more spiritual, more godlike, and then you move on to another sense and center. You have the same types of senses and centers, but in a different body, a body that deals with things through emotional energies rather than physical energies. Okay? What we would call emotional. Some people like prefer the word astral. It's the same thing. It's okay. You can use either one. So that's what you're doing. But you're still focused, you're still overall focused on changing the physical world. But just using more of your astral senses with the physical as you go through and develop a stronger first initiation type of, we'll call it, service. All right, so and that's what your focus is on. Finally, you get to the third part, which is sometimes, but there's names to these stages. Let me give you the names. Okay, so I hope I'm not losing you, but I know it's complicated, right? Isn't it? The very first stage, besides the aspirin, who isn't really doing much other than kind of like getting their feet wet. Beyond the aspirin stage, the very first stage is the stage in which a person has learned, we'll say, to create at a level in which there is a significant connection to other people about the physical world. So when we refer to this, some people might say, well, what does that mean? It means that there's this growing sense that you and others have developed a oneness as an experimental, we'll say, side to it, of trying to experiment with others to create more oneness together. That's the first stage. The second stage is trying to not, and that's with people on a personal level, so we'll call that like a personal stage. Then the next stage really has to do with trying to connect with others as souls. And you want to find out whether or not that you can actually connect with others, not just as persons any longer, but as souls. The second stage requires some of the astral body disciplines, because in order to sense the soul, you have to do more than just be concerned about a physical outcome. You have to be concerned about how you and the others that you deal with feel in an emotional sense. It's called the accepting stage. Some people call it the accepting stage. There's a lot of different kinds of words for these stages because it depends upon what discipline of you follow in metaphysics and spirituality. And finally, you get to the third stage of this whole thing. And in that third stage, you went from the personality to trying out to see if you can see souls. At the third stage, you now are certain that people that you deal with and you co-serve with are souls. You're absolutely certain. And this certainty comes from the fact that you can understand truth, and that you can see and know the difference between the true from, or the real from the unreal, the truth from non-truth, and you can also determine with some degree of certainty that not only are you giving, but you're giving wisely to others. And that's when you become pledged. What does pledged mean? It means that you are totally convinced that what you're doing with these other people that you're serving with, whoever they might be, is truly an expression of God. The accepting stage, you don't get that sense from. In the accepting stage, which is the earlier part, you get a sense that you're using, in this first stage of initiation, you're using the physical body, but you're uncertain that you're doing it as a soul with other souls. You're constantly doubting, is the best way to describe it. There's constant doubts. Okay, finally, you reach the point where you say, okay, I've got this pledge stage down pretty good, and now I'm going to go ahead and, now this is on the first level of initiation, so you're going to say, now I want to really create something physically that's going to change the world in this way or that way. And so you start using, by the way, the third stage, you were using your mind, your mental body a lot, and your mental senses. You're joining those senses together. But finally, you go on and you say, intuitively, I'm going to co-create and come up with completely new ideas, new ways of doing things that others haven't actually come up with. And you become the highest level creator in the physical sense, to create some physical betterment of God in the physical world. And you're doing this with others, and you are totally convinced the others are souls, so you function more as a soul yourself. And you become a leader when you do that. And that's called the accepted, not accepting, but accepted stage, where not only have you accepted God, but you're also accepted by the next kingdom to get the zap. And once you get the zap, then all of the physical senses are much closer together than they were before, almost instantly, but your karma is accelerated, and you may go into a tizzy for a lifetime or two because it's very difficult to overcome that karma that's coming after you. But you will do it, and you can do it. Okay, and some people get lost. They get through the accepted stage, they become a leader of a spiritual group, they do things that are wonderful. But at the end of that life, they come back and they may not succeed in the next life in taking in functioning at the next level of initiation. What is the next level? It deals more with the astral body focus. It's much more difficult. It's called the second level of initiation. You go through the same four stages all over again, but at higher levels. And much higher levels of unification of the centers and use of the centers for spiritual service, and you're serving people simultaneously in an astral sense, changing their creative imagination and their astral feelings to be more loving in wise ways, and helping in a physical sense as well. So you're kind of building with the physical, but now you're building the astral part of yourself as well while you're doing so with everybody else. That which you do for others, you become. That which you do not do for others, you lose. So that's the basic theory. Okay, eventually you get through those four stages. You become an accepted disciple for that. And then you move on to the third level of initiation. Now you're in the big time. Why? Because you're more, in some circumstances, a soul at some points than you are a human. You're moving from being a human being to a superhuman, meaning that you're moving from being a soul only when you're in the soul's realm, that's a human, to now being a soul while you're outside of the soul's realm in the human realm. The human realm is the lower mental, the astral, and the physical worlds. If you can be a soul in those worlds, which is what the soul is doing this whole thing for, you now have become a part of God in those worlds, full time. And that's what we mean by superhuman in those worlds. Okay, finally, in that third initiation, you overcome virtually completely your fear of death. By the middle of it, you overcome most of the illusions about God and evil by the middle of it. And you're no longer in a great deal of illusion about many things, except you may be in illusion about what it means to truly co-create with God. And this is where it gets tough. Because once you start sensing that you're a soul, can you now jump into something called monadic consciousness, which is beyond your soul, and become something even greater than the soul was in its own realm? Now you're growing the soul directly instead of indirectly. This is a real big deal. And you do that mostly from the middle of the third initiation into the fourth. Now, the fourth initiation, you go through the same stages, but now most of your senses are unified. So you have amazing sense. And if you have amazing sense, you have amazing consciousness that comes from that. And each of the four stages, as they take place as an arhat, or a fourth level initiate, now you are not only as a soul functioning to some level in the physical, astral, and lower mental worlds, but you're actually at first a great teacher and then a great leader among all spiritual people. You have become a great, truly great, about to become a superhuman being. And this is an amazing part of the process. It's also the most difficult. Strangely, these are not easier at every step. They become more difficult because you're doing so many more things. The soul now is growing faster and faster due to the fact that it's acting as it used to act only in the higher mental world, where it's very easy to do most of the stuff it was doing. But it's doing it in the physical world just as efficiently as it used to do it only in the higher mental. This is truly drawing it out into becoming some great, great being that we can only call superhuman. And the fourth level initiate, unlike the lower three that get zapped to complete the part of the initiation that unifies the senses to a certain level and their consciousness to an elevated level, the fourth level initiate zaps themselves, in effect. They truly complete the process on their own. this is the true expression of making yourself into a superhuman. So ultimately, even though the initiation process sort of is a cheating way because you're getting help by the next kingdom, finally at the end, you got to do it yourself. So ultimately, you still don't make it unless you do it all on your own. Well, I hope this has made some sense to you today. That was a fairly lengthy explanation, but of course, I wanted to be complete, and I hope it makes some sense. If you have a chance on April 19th, go hear Mimi talk about the history of recorded civilization from an esoteric perspective over at Borders Books and Music at Mesa Fiesta if you're in the Phoenix area on that day from 7 to 8:15 p.m. No charge, just come by. If you haven't heard about it before, try Ideal Soul Absorption Resveratrol and give it a shot because it's really working for me and it's working for a lot of other people. You can get it from foreveryoungproducts.com, 800-777-7850. And if you haven't tried it yet, you definitely have to give it a shot because I tell you, it works on animals as well as people. You can get the VF formula. And please, please give it a shot if you can. Okay. Well, we're running out of time for right now, which is not surprising. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.